AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Merry Christmas, everyone. We hope that you are having a great day and getting swept up in the joy of the season. Markets are closed. Government is closed. But we've got plenty of business to cover on today's Free For All.
Live from Christmas morn via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday Free For All. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and the Overlord, John Harith. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Flory.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus. Actually, he came last night, didn't he?
Santa Claus, Santa Claus. Well, yes, he did. For those of us on the nice list, yes, he did. Oh. He absolutely did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, those of us on the nice list.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. We few, we nice, humble few.
Well, that's right. Didn't you say something about you found your name like in the first three pages of the PDF of the nice list or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How'd you end up there?
Right there.
Wow, that's pretty good.
It wasn't easy. It took a conscious effort, really. And nice. I'm hoping that there's some carryover, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, if I can just wind up in the top 100 pages next year, I feel like I'm good. You know, level it out a little bit.
I hear you. Merry Christmas, man. How you doing? Everything good?
Merry Christmas. Everything is great. Really good.
Good. All right. We've got the free-for-all going today. Now, word of warning to everybody out there. Yes, it is a dedicated group that does the free-for-all. But this was recorded earlier this week.
Yes,
so if there was a little bit of movement in some of these issues on Christmas Eve...
Mm-hmm.
You know, give us a little bit of slack there. But we're going to be talking about the stimulus package. We've got to. I mean, there's $13 billion in there that is dedicated to agriculture. It's a $900 billion stimulus package, but $13 billion of that is dedicated to agriculture. How is that going to impact things? We're going to talk about that spending bill. You know, when you put them both together, a $1.4 trillion spending bill, a $900 million stimulus package. We're talking about $2.3 trillion in new spending, Davis.
Yes, and the news at one point was that the president was displeased with the package itself, possibly threatening to shoot it down. Well, maybe that's one of the risks that you take. I feel like there were a certain amount of assumptions that went into coming up with this. You know, I mean, you tie those two packages together, and now all of a sudden, if you're going to throw it out, you're throwing out the baby and the bathwater and that, you know, little iron tub thing too. It's all going out the window.
That's right. That's right. It's an interesting situation that we find ourselves in right now because I'm telling you, if they would have been two separate packages, which it should have been, there's no way that we should have ever gotten to this point. But the Democrat leadership in the House in particular, looking straight at you, Speaker Pelosi, did not want to give in on a stimulus package ahead of the election. That's the bottom line here. That's why all of a sudden, instead of a $900 billion, or at that time, it might have been a $1.5 trillion stimulus package, and we would have had the $2,000 per person, per taxpayer, per whatever we're going to call it out there, $4,000 per couple, throw some more in there for the kids. There would have been, I think that probably would have been included. Instead, here we are, and now even the president is having difficulty separating the two components of the one bill. It is one bill. I understand that, but there are two components to it.
Well, there's some weird stuff deep down in there. I could see
always,
you know, a guy thinking twice about.
Yeah, always, always. We'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it later. If the president had line item veto power, he'd be using it.
Right.
He'd be using it aggressively. And as a matter of fact, he would probably just scratch out 600 and put in 2000 and initial it. You know, when it comes to the stimulus check for individuals out there.
I got a Christmas question for you. I got a Christmas question.
Love it.
I got a phone call from my neighbor the other day at about 3 o'clock. So not dark yet. No, it was earlier than
AM,
that.
PM.
It was closer to 2 p.m. in the afternoon.
Okay.
Sun was up.
Yeah.
She says to me, "You need to turn your Christmas lights on. It's getting to be Christmas already, and you need to put them on while you still can. You need to turn your Christmas lights on." Well, my lights were on. They were on.
Yeah.
And I felt like I could see them.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, they weren't visible because she was driving by going to town.
So does your neighbor Karen make these requests often?
She's in close contact. I'm just going to leave it at that. But I told her, well, my lights were on. Well, you need brighter lights then. I mean, I don't know. I got the LED kind. You know, if I like look right at them, it feels like I've just had eye surgery. You know what I mean? They're like super bright.
I see spots for 3 hours after I look straight at them. Yeah, I get you.
How bright do these things need to be?
I'm sure they're bright enough, Davis. I'm sure that you have done it
Thanks
well.
Thanks for that, Chip. Thanks for
I'm
that,
I'm sure
Chip.
That it is just fine.
Okay. I feel better now.
Good.
I'd hate to be doing Christmas wrong, you know, shaming the neighborhood in some way.
Right. And speaking of Karen and looking, I mean, Karen became a thing in 2020.
Karen.
Karen. We're going to do a little bit of looking back at 2020. Okay. Now, when I ask Wiesmeyer and Haney and Harith about this, obviously it's a COVID related issue, Davis. That we're going to be talking about. But when you look back at the year that we're wrapping up, there are so many things that happened and so many different tentacles from the COVID story that reached out into agriculture. You know, when you look at it, what might come straight to the top of your mind?
Straight to the top of my mind is and I don't mean to be buttering up the farmers out there, okay? You guys have your problems. You know what's going on. But seriously, like when the worst of it was hitting in the springtime, dude, these guys were still out there working away.
Yeah.
You know, we got a great crop in. Everything got done as near as I can tell. And then sort of the same type of deal over on the land side. Land values hung right in there through the entire deal. And even after, you know, once everything came up and we started getting some sales going in September and then October and then November, it really took off.
Yeah.
You know, land values hung right in there. I really feel like, and again, not trying to be, you know, weird here, but I guess what I'm pointing out is the divide between the urban dweller and the rural dweller. You know, those of us who have put roots down out here in not only in this industry, but in farming areas of the country. I think had a lot different experience with this than our urban friends.
Well, put.
That's what I think about.
Well put. And we are going to continue to look at some of the impacts of the COVID year that it had on agriculture, that it is having on agriculture, and that it will continue to have on all of us in the year ahead. Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas to you, Davis. Merry Christmas, Joe, Big Apple Joe Stackler. We've got the free-for-all coming your way. We've got Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Harith next, right here on AgriTalk.
Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. But exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we utilize all that corn while ensuring dependable markets right here at home? POET is working hard to increase the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%. Nationwide, adoption of E15 would generate almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year, which is the equivalent of nearly doubling corn exports by increasing domestic markets that can't be taken away. That's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unite around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgro, and Bear Plus Rewards. Perform like a champion each and every season.
Merry Christmas and welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. It is Christmas morning. Hope that you're all recovering from the early morning wake-up that the kiddos gave you. I'm your host, Chip Flory, and let's bring in the jolly old man, Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. How you doing, Jim?
Pretty good. I can watch Wonder Woman on Netflix free of charge today.
Oh. Wonder Woman, 1984.
Yes.
I love it. Good. And it's a good day to do it. Yes. Sit back, relax, man. Let's go up there closer to Santa. Sean Haney. Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chip. I'm here to tell everybody Elf is maybe the funniest Christmas movie ever made right there. That's what I'm doing today.
That is a point of debate on Twitter big time. I mean, there are people that think that it's the stupidest thing ever made.
What? Those are just Will Ferrell haters. Come on.
That's. I would agree. You know, I don't mind it. I don't mind a little Elf and during the holidays, but I'm a Christmas Vacation guy. I am.
You. I could see you having like a little. You have an inner Clark Griswold. You would. I could see you. Yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Glad you're here, man. And John Harris, Farm Journal News Director. How you doing, Johnny?
Good. My Christmas Eve tradition is Die Hard.
Die Hard.
Every year.
Okay.
Gotta watch it. Best Christmas movie.
Whatevs. Whatevs. Well, whatever your favorite Christmas movie is, I'm glad that you are joining us on this Christmas Day. We've got a lot to talk about on the free-for-all. Jim, you know what? Let's put out a warning to everybody. Yes, we are dedicated to the free-for-all here at AgriTalk. We are. But it is not Friday morning when we're having this conversation. It is Wednesday afternoon when we are having this conversation. And I want everybody to understand that, put it in perspective, because we got to talk about the package, and that being the spending bill and the stimulus bill that together add up to $2.3 trillion. Jim, is it going to pass the mustard at the White House?
Boy, you began the year with tough questions and you're ending them with even tougher. Yeah. I think eventually a resolution will be found. I just don't know what it will be, but money will eventually come. You know, Trump's asking for $2,000 payments on the direct side versus $600. But that means another $400 billion, Chip.
So it's just $400 billion.
Yes. I would take my cue
really
from Senate Majority Leader
that?
Mitch McConnell, because it's going to be his final decision which way to go on the Senate floor on this one. That's who I'm watching.
John, what was your comment there?
I said, do you really think Donald Trump can veto this one? I mean, I know where he's headed with this and trying to play with the base for the added money. But when it comes down to it, can you really veto direct payments to the electorate just before the end of the year? Especially when we've been waiting 8 months for it.
It reminds
me a lot. Well, in 2018, he threatened to veto the omnibus, you know, budget bill, and then he backed off. So, can he, we've tried to predict him for 4 years, all Americans, and it's hard. I think he wins either way, to tell you the truth. because he's got the whole list of those line items in the omnibus spending bill, the $1.4 trillion omnibus spending bill, that I will tell you has a lot of acceptance out there that Congress should not be providing that money. You know, assistance to Cambodia, funding for Egypt, military weapons that they may not buy from the U.S. You've got money for gender programs in Pakistan. So he's got some elements on his side.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me a lot of the G8 meeting that was actually in Canada early on in the Trump presidency, where remember, he got in the helicopter and then Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada made some comments about the meeting. And then Trump said he wouldn't sign the communique and made a big deal about it. And then quietly they signed the communique. Yeah, it feels like a lot more bluster. I think, there are reasons to be critical of omnibus bills. When I saw it, I think it's just all about McConnell not supporting him. In what's going on with his challenges to the election, he is really bitter with Mitch McConnell right now, and I think that's driving it.
Yeah, interesting point, Jim. What about the potential impacts on the Senate races down in Georgia?
It could be key on the two Senate runoff races, January the 5th. That would show that the Republicans could not deliver, and the Democrats would hit that pretty hard, because it didn't take a nanosecond for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to take up Trump's on his suggestion for a $2,000 payment. So she wants to put it to a vote.
Have a vote on Thursday,
Yes.
She could have had a vote in October on that.
Yes, but we're looking forward.
Yeah, but sometimes to look forward for the reasons, you got to look back.
Well, she clearly, to most people, made a mistake. But now he's playing into her hands right now. But again, the market.
But many others, would say that she played it exactly right because Trump didn't win.
You can say both sides. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Was that driven
the Dow
by
is
the
up over
COVID
260
package?
Points at the time of this recording. So the market, the traders believe that this is a Trump bluff.
Okay. Yeah. I would go along with that. Yep. Don't you think, guys, that if there was line item veto power in the White House, that President Trump would be on his fourth or fifth highlighter by now?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he would be going through and the aid to Egypt, that'd be gone. That's one example, and that's one example that everybody is using. I get it. But it's stuff like that. He would just be going, nope. Oh, $600? No, let's make that $2,000 DT. Just initial it and say, push that through.
Yeah, but okay, to be fair, though,
some of the things he's
there's another side
about,
that look at this and say, well, he put a lot of money in the hands of his support in the Midwest. Through the past 3 years, it works both ways. I just wonder, are we not going to see more of a push to move back to where there's earmarks, where there's much more transparency on some of these things and who they're tied to?
The House is going that way in the new Congress. There's no doubt about it. The Senate will eventually follow suit.
Right. John Harith, I know that you had a comment that you wanted to jump in here with. What do you got?
Well, I was just going to point out that a number of the items, like funding for the Kennedy Center President Trump is complaining about this week, the funding levels are actually lower than what was in the president's proposed budget earlier in the year.
Huh. Well.
Wow.
That is interesting.
This is not a time for facts.
Yeah, come on, John. Knock it off, man. What are you doing?
This is metrics, image.
I thought I tried throwing fact out there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I want to switch gears with the last minute that we've got here. And this is going to get us started on a couple of things that I had a conversation with John Doggett about. John is the CEO of the National Corn Growers Association. I asked him what his thoughts are on Vilsack 2.0, Jim, and he had the same question that many have had. Why?
Well, it's usually when a president, in this case, President-elect Joe Biden, asks you, I would say 9 out of 10, you know, people would say yes, even reluctantly. And that's probably where Vilsack was at, because he is leaving a fairly high level paying post to come to a lower level, paying, cabinet position. Yeah. But I was also told this climate change really got him, rethinking his initial opposition, Jeff.
Exactly. Here's the deal with Tom Vilsack. He has been at it long enough now that and he always said that USDA secretary was his dream job. Okay, great. If that's your dream job, you can come back and do it. But at the same time, if we just need somebody to give us a fluid transition to somebody new later, it could be that that is what's going on there as well. Hey, we're going to keep the free-for-all going. Merry Christmas, everybody. We'll be back in a moment.
There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol nationwide would result in almost 2 billion bushels of new domestic corn demand each year. That means nearly eliminating the need for corn exports by ensuring dependable markets right here at home while driving commodity prices to profitable levels. Biofuels are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Merry Christmas and best to all the AgriTalk listeners for a healthy and successful 2021. I'm Jeff Wilson, Senior Market Analyst at Pro Farmer, with your market update. Soybeans traded new contract highs for a sixth consecutive session to close the holiday shortened trading week on Thursday. Soybeans are now trading at the highest since August of 2014. Corn rose to the highest in 17 months this week, and wheat is holding near two-year highs. New fund money is coming into the commodities, with the U.S. dollar back on the defensive. Traders are betting the January 12th USDA final 2020 crop production and updated supply and demand forecast will show further tightening in U.S. and global ending stocks. Market bulls are betting on higher prices to slow corn and soybean demand. But current prices are now reaching levels that may end up slowing demand, but we won't know that until it happens. The focus in the next week will remain on the labor strike and dry weather in Argentina. Port and crush workers are demanding to be paid in blue peso rates, a wage increase equal to about 80%. Any deal will likely lead to a correction after this week's surge in soybeans, meal, and oil to new contract highs. The cattle market this week ended higher with new contract highs and some deferred cattle futures. Cash cattle rebounded, but beef prices continued defensive, increasing the importance of an improvement in demand. USDA noted another drop in November placements, and January inventory report is likely to show a 1% drop in the U.S. calf crop in 2020 from 2019. Hogs also finished with gains this week, with some deferred contracts hitting new highs. USDA hogs and pigs report showed about a 0.9% drop in the U.S. herd from a year ago. I'm Jeff Wilson for Pro Farmer on AgriTalk.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Chip Flory.
I'm Davis Michelson.
And I'm producer Joe Stackler.
Merry Christmas from AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. It's a free-for-all on this Christmas Day 2020. Okay, yeah, we got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio, Sean Haney, and Farm Journal News Director John Harith. Guys, at the end of the last segment, we were talking about Vilsack 2.0. Another likely cabinet member here is Michael Reagan. He is the nominee, or will be Biden's nominee, to head up the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, I mentioned that I talked with John Doggett CEO of NCJA last week, and he let us know, Jim, that Michael Reagan reached out to him to let him know that he understands that EPA is going to have to work closely with farmers and corn growers to achieve some of the climate goals that are out there in front of us for the next 4 years of a Biden administration. I found that very encouraging.
That's smart politics, refreshing, and now we need to see follow through.
Yeah, we do need to see the follow through. But John Harreth, I know that when you heard John say that you were very encouraged by it as well.
Yeah, my jaw about hit the floor. And not just that he called, but it was out of the blue. It wasn't a scheduled, okay, we're going to set up this call. And it's for, no, he just called John Doggett's cell phone out of the blue and laid out the parameters of what he sees as the relationship between corn growers and EPA going into this. And I think that's why you saw a lot of positive reaction when Michael Reagan was announced, even though most of us didn't know who he was before that, coming from the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality. But you contrast that positive response you got across the ag industry to Michael Reagan's announcement to the absolute silence about Gina McCarthy's announcement. Nobody put out anything, any word, any reaction at all, nor are they willing to talk about Gina McCarthy coming back into government.
I think it could be a case of denial in the ag industry, Jim.
Ostrich technique.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because we got so used to using the name Gina McCarthy and the phrase overreach as ag journalists. We got so used to doing that in the past. I mean, I'm breaking out the old verbiage again.
Well, she's the stick, and it looks like, I think it's Reagan, I'm not quite sure, will be the carrot, at least for a while. But this tells you, Chip, how important they see the ag sector going into their carbon crop harvesting, hopefully, and how they'll be an integral part of their climate change plans.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Haney, when we look up north, I mean, do you feel like carbon is being handled with a stick or a carrot?
Right now, very much a stick. You know, and that applies to the carbon tax. It's a bit of a double-edged sword. It's, you know, a lot of focus on the carbon tax, and we kind of chatted about that last week in terms of potentially what some of the costs are for things like corn grain drying going forward with some of the steep increases. But, you know, the government is at the same time trying to follow some of the U.S. lead on biofuel growth, you know, trying to get towards, you know, where we don't necessarily have a mandate of E15 on corn-based ethanol, but that's the volume that they're working towards, moving biodiesel from 2% to 11%. You know, there's some pretty strong increases. And they put out some regulations late last Friday that hit Canada Gazette, and they're following some of the U.S. lead on, you know, looking at this from a national aggregate from a land use standpoint. So they've really taken some of how the U.S. does this to build their own, essentially our Canadian version of the RFS.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. When we talk about the RFS and where we're going next with this, Jim, it's got to take on more of the environmental, argument than the market access side of things. And when we start talking about some of the higher blends and, you know, some of the opinion leaders, I guess I would call them on this, are looking straight out to California and saying that, listen, they're attributing 2/3 of the cut in their GHG to the use of higher blends of ethanol out there. Okay. I mean, it feels like ethanol is finally getting the environmental argument that they've been looking for.
You're absolutely correct. And it's taken too long to get there, but at least it looks like we're there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this octane. And nonetheless, we get word from the incoming Biden administration that they're looking at part of the infrastructure. And Pete Buttigieg says one of the first things that we're going to do is put up 500,000 charging stations for EVs. A couple of things. where are we getting all the components for it? Where are we getting the electricity to feed into it? Where are we getting enough cars to take advantage of 500,000 EV charging stations? Aren't we thinking, isn't that a little premature in this?
Well, it's going to take multiple years, but I will tell you, I know it was when you were hunting, Chip, but go back last week and read the Wall Street Journal op-ed by Jay Leno, the comedian, who's a ferocious car, you know, collector. And he nailed it when it came to the growing use of, you know, battery operated cars. It's going to take a while, but I would encourage anyone, you know, to read that. I think that's the template of what's going to happen. Yes, all these 550,000 charging stations is going to take 3 to 5 years or longer, you know, to get out there. But that's infrastructure.
Okay. Well, there was a story in Bloomberg, I think it was last week, that talked about Canadian Minister of Environment and Climate Change, Jonathan Wilkinson, was encouraging the Biden administration or the incoming administration to ban, you know, across the U.S., be like California and ban gas-powered vehicles aggressively with Canada. So I think that's one of the a little bit of the warning here is that we have a very, very aggressive Canadian government right now on climate. And you put them together with some of the people on the Democrat side, there's going to need to be some moderates mixed into this conversation to tame this down a little bit.
Interesting. Interesting. You know, the climate is going to be and battles against climate change are going to be part of our conversations going forward, guys. I mean, the Biden administration and Joe Biden himself have made it very clear that if we're not up to speed on environmental issues, that's going to be a regular part of the news treadmill going forward.
Absolutely, Chip. And for perspective, the Obama administration tried to use the stick, you know, like Canada apparently is doing. This time, I think they've learned from lessons in the past, and they're going to be a combination of carrots and stick. Okay. Also, I think Bill Sachs, a history of being a consensus builder, and what you're telling me, this incoming EPA person as well has a history of that. And just look at just this past week, the current issue or upcoming issue of Farm Journal has a big spread on the, you know, carbon credit, I think, you know, four different companies. Yep. The Wall Street Journal today, Wednesday's edition, has an in-depth look at the ag industry's latest cash crop bet they set, and it's carbon, where they go through the big ag companies are jockeying with startups to encourage crop producers to adopt climate-friendly practices. So you're seeing a consensus build here, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
Jeff, I'd add that you know, it's easy to get our back up because of the history that we've seen with climate issues in agriculture. But as Jim notes, there are some significant hints that things are different this time. And while we should be wary and alert of what's going on, we shouldn't be defensive because we could miss some opportunities to make money out of this new carbon scheme.
Amen.
Absolutely.
Yes. That excellent point, John. And if you do just simply decide that, oh, this is mumbo jumbo, you're going to miss out. You're going to miss out on that. And that I'm telling you, that right there, John, is 100% why I've committed to staying on top of it as much as I possibly can. I mean, in the past year, we've had several conversations about carbon sequestration and how we're going to get paid for it. I just keep asking the question, and John Doggett brought this up in the conversation earlier this week. It was a really good conversation with John, you guys. That's why I keep going back to it. But we can't. Agriculture cannot lose credit for making the advancements in carbon sequestration that we have. The advancements that have already been made, and if we are selling that carbon credit and getting paid for it, we still have to remember where the saving was created. It's not like we can't sell it into we can't sell the credits into the electric vehicle development because those guys need their carbon credits right now. Okay, so they're going out to agriculture and buying it. We cannot forget that it originated with agriculture. And I think we're at risk of letting that happen, Jim.
Well, the corn growers are there where you just said, and the soybean producers are there, biodiesel, et cetera. I'm not quite sure the biofuel groups are there yet, Chip, and they do have a history of being pretty defensive.
Yeah, there's no question.
And don't forget about all the land that's in grassland. Ranchers have a really good story to tell here as well when it comes to carbon sequestration.
That's right. That is exactly
that's
right.
That's your legacy, that they better get credit for things they've already done.
Already done, and already have implemented and continue to use in their regular farming practices that are helping the environment. Okay, guys, when we come back, we're not going to look forward to 2021 yet. We'll do that next week. I want to look back at 2020. I mean, I think I know what the story is going to be that's going to dominate, but let's look back at 2020 and get your highlights. We'll be back with the free-for-all right here on AgriTalk.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got the free-for-all going. Jim Wiesmeyer, John Harith, and Sean Haney. Jim, you were part of this at Pro Farmer, the effort to select the person of the year, the event of the year, the news of the year, and so on. And I want to go to the person slash people of the year, and that was the essential workers. It couldn't be a better pick than the essential workers in 2020, could it?
No, because the overriding issue was COVID and how we're dealing with it.
Yeah. John, when you look back at 2020 and you think about the people that influenced how things happened. I mean, I told Brian Grady, the editor at Pro Farmer, I said, listen, love him, hate him, it doesn't matter. You've at least got to think about President Donald Trump as a potential person of the year because he was right in the middle of everything.
Well, in particular, when you look at agriculture with some 36% of farm income coming from ad hoc payments through CFAP 1 and 2, I don't think anybody had more of an influence on agriculture other than COVID in 2020.
Right. Haney, when you think back at the people that had the most influence on the ag industry in the year behind us, who would you look at?
Oh, I thought of right away the packing plant industry. And so that includes the essential workers working in those plants. It includes the management at those companies, people at the CDC working with them. I'll tell you what, it was a chaotic year between all the shutdowns and then what happened at the grocery store shelves. Will we have a shortage? Did we have a shortage? What'll happen? I think that for me, that's the story of the year and one that I followed very closely with its up and downs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And weaving through all these topics we just discussed is China, because from the supposed beginning of the COVID there and their tremendous amount of purchases of U.S. farm products that is helping lead to a demand pull market now.
Yeah, no doubt.
That at the beginning of the year, China was everything, and now it's like, oh, yeah, and China.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, think back. Like, I remember being at the NCBA meeting early in February, and it was all about, coming off of ASF, and it was going to be the year of the protein. And boy, little did we know about 2 weeks, 30 days later, we sort of forgot about ASF. We had this new acronym, COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, on Wednesday, I had a farmer forum. Chad Lehman from Illinois was on there with me, and I said, Chad, go back a year ago right now. And hog producers were looking at the year ahead, that being 2020, and saying, oh, my gosh, look at what we've got coming. This is the year that we kill it. We're putting money in the bank this year. Fast forward a year, and we're kind of going, boy, I hope we can get back to putting some money in the bank just because of all the disruption that was caused by COVID, no question. We've got to mention the Lifetime Achievement Awards, Jim, that were mentioned by Pro Farmer. You've got Mike Conaway, you've got Pat Roberts, and you've got Colin Peterson, who are for differing reasons, are leaving Congress, and but they're taking with them so much knowledge in ag policy. It's not impossible to replace, but it's going to be difficult.
Absolutely. And both Conaway and Pat Roberts made sure that production agriculture were very well compensated for good reason out of this latest package. And, you know, Colin Peterson has forgotten more than most people know on ag and ethanol policy. And I want to give a shout out for Pat Roberts, a longtime friend of mine now, a farmer journalist, by the way. But right. His work on the Intelligence Committee years ago, Chip, should not be forgotten.
Right. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Semper Fighter Roberts, no doubt. And the other thing with Colin Peterson, something that is included in the COVID aid package is compensation for producers that had to euthanize hogs because the hogs just wouldn't fit in the supply chain at the time. And Colin Peterson screamed for it, Jim. He screamed for that to be included.
Yes. You always have to have cheerleaders push for these things in Congress because they can add up to a lot of money. And he does so very effectively, or he did so for many years.
Yep. Guys, I'm going to, COVID is all going to be in my mind when we remember 2020. Of course. The other thing that is going to be in my mind about 2020, because I'm a markets guy, is a $4 rally in beans in the last third of the year. $4. It's absolutely amazing to me. And look at what we've done in corn. And it's because of what we've been talking about. Yeah, we had some weather issues. The crop wasn't what we thought it was going to be, or many thought that it was going to be in the first half of the growing season. We went out on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, came back raising some at least yellow flag, saying, listen, guys, it's drier out there than what many of you might think. There's some risks out there. That all took so much time to develop and to digest, but here we are, highest bean prices in about 6.5 years. Corn, you don't have to go back that far because of the spring that we had in 2019. The front month futures are back to where we were, I believe, like July of 2019, something like that. But beans, you got to go all the way back to 2014 since we've had these kinds of prices. Pretty astonishing stuff. And I think, fellas, we would be remiss looking back at 2020 if I wouldn't say thank you to you, Jim, and to you, Sean, and to you, John, for being part of the free-for-all every week. Got to mention Pam Johnson. She was a faithful participant in the free-for-all. Decided to take a break from it, which is, hey, there's times that I'd like to take a break too, fellas. Unfortunately, my paycheck is tied to it and hers isn't. So we love Pam, and we know that she's going to be back on with us again before too long. We'll have her back on. Guys, I'll do this individually. Jim, Merry Christmas to you, man.
Merry Christmas.
We'll talk to you again. All right. All right. Sean Haney, Merry Christmas, buddy. Be good.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Chip, and everybody in the AgriTalk audience.
All right. John Harris, Merry Christmas to you, man.
Merry Christmas to you, too, and how appropriate to have three Santas and a Haney for this show today.
I love it. Merry Christmas out there, everybody. We'll be back Monday with more AgriTalk.